going on, guys? Dustin, alcoholic. I blame Nikki because she asked me if I was nervous and I totally wasn't. And then there's this fucking microphone. And you know when there's the microphone and you can hear your own voice and it sounds different than in your own head, then it messes with me. I don't like it. So, just letting you know that off the bat because it cuts it in half. My sobriety date is, what is it? May 21st, 2011. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. We'll get to that. And then I am willing to sponsor other people. I don't currently have one, but COVID has made that very difficult. For the last like 4 or 5 years, I was volunteering at the county jail, and pretty much at all times had my max limit of sponsees there. And now they're like, they're letting us in, they're not letting us in. What's going on? Nobody knows. So that's where we're at there. But my home group is the Sarasota YPG. It meets on Wednesday nights at 7:30 p.m. at Concordia Lutheran Church. It has been my home group since I got out of rehab about 10 years ago. I really like that meeting. My most recent sponsor had suggested that I try to like branch off and like challenge myself to like, you know, do something different. And I was like, I don't know, I'm really comfortable here. So we're working on that one. I guess we should start at the beginning. I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I have not shared more than like a 20-minute share in a long time. This is going to be, we'll see if we can fill in this time. Obviously, it starts where I was born. That's in Sarasota. I'm born and raised there, lived there since I was born. I grew up... not really in like any super odd circumstances. I was pretty fortunate. Both my parents were physicians. I didn't want for much. I was very spoiled. The only thing that was kind of weird about my childhood, my older brother was severely physically disabled, mentally all there. I grew up a little spoiled, and I don't say that like bragging. I just say it because it's this disease doesn't discriminate, and there's a lot of it's not as common of a story that I hear in these rooms, and I like to make sure to spread that message that there's celebrities, there's so many different people that have this thing. It doesn't matter, because it was so hard for me to really accept that I was an alcoholic and like degenerate and like all these things, and like admit that I had all these problems, because like look where I come from. I live on the beach, because I did all those things. That was really important for me to understand eventually, and like to fully surrender, was that those things didn't matter. Growing up, therapists and stuff told me that I felt a little apart from and neglected, because I had a 5-year younger brother and then a 2-year older brother who was disabled, so they were getting all the attention, and I didn't necessarily feel that way, but I did always feel like I wanted attention and I was reaching for it. I remember acting out on like alcoholic type behaviors at a really young age, I want to say I was like 9 or 10. I was like stealing from my mom, like out of her purse, because like I really needed this money, and I would. I remember one time she discovered that I took like $10 out of her purse, and I made up this like ridiculous lie, I was just trying to test your detective skills, or whatever. I didn't get any better at lying later. it's funny because later I could steal thousands at a time and she wouldn't notice. So I don't know how where that got lost, but we'll get to that also. But I also remember when my parents would have beer or wine or whatever, and every once in a while I was allowed to have just a taste, and I would ask why can't I have my own, and they would say, oh, well, this is an adult drink, you would feel very weird if you had your own, you're very small, things like that. And I knew from the first time I was told that I was going to have some, that I was going to have my own one day, and that was a goal, when the opportunity arose, game time. Growing up, I bounced around a few different schools, you know, nothing too, like, you know, I didn't move cities or this or that, but I do remember, like, always acting out and wanting, you know, I got in a little bit of trouble. I was, you know, I got good grades and I did this and that up through, like, seventh grade, and then I kind of discovered, like, you know, vandalizing houses and, like, sneaking out at night and, you know, doing stuff like that. You know, I did a lot of sports and things like that also, but, you know, like, I think it was pretty early, like, you know, I swear I started drinking often, and then eventually on school nights, and, you know, making up the, like, yeah, we're working on a project, we weren't, and, you know, I did a lot of, you know, other dry goods, and, you know, smokable alcohol, nasal sports, you know, I got into those things really early, because they were just more easily accessible, because I started pretty young. I don't, like, remember specifically my very first drink, which is weird. Not a lot of people, I feel like, in the room say that, but the one I do remember that at this point, the one that I remember the most vivid, I think I was in seventh grade or something like that, or like the summer between seventh and eighth, and I remember this wasn't my first drink because I was so far through watering down all the bottles in my parents' liquor cabinet that I had to, like, sneak in the back to the dusty, like, bottle of Cavassier cognac, and I, like, would take cans of, like, Canada Dry ginger ale and, like, empty them, like, a full half, and then the rest of it with this cognac, and I don't even know to this day if that's a good mixer, because I was 19 when I got sober, so I don't know, you know, like, what's supposed to be mixed with that. I don't think ginger ale, but, you know, and I drank, like, three of these cans, and, like, I remember I was sitting, like, our house was designed in a weird way, but I was, like, on the other side of the house from my room, and just, like, I drank these three cans of, you know, ginger ale and cognac, and, like, I felt like I was fine, and I was like, huh, you know, I really thought I was going to get drunk off this. You know, it's been a few hours. Lame. I'm going to go to bed. You know, I, like, stood up and was, like, getting ready to strut to my room, and I just fell flat on my face. Like, I was so inebriated. Like, I literally, like, I had to crawl across the house, like, crawl up onto my bed. It was a Murphy bed, by the way. It was fucking sweet. And so much room for activities when you put that thing up. And I crawled up onto my bed, and I was, like, on my knees, just, like squatting. And I threw up, fell asleep, and apparently pissed myself at some point. And woke up and, like, didn't really see a problem with that. Yeah, it was a good night all by myself in, like, seventh or eighth grade, like, just getting that drunk. And it didn't get too much better, but I did kind of change to, like, doing just smokable alcohol for quite a while, because it was, like, much easier, much quicker. Like, I just wanted to be some sort of, like, outside myself. And I don't know, like, in high school, you know, I got arrested, like, a bunch of times. Like, I think my third month of freshman year, I got arrested for, like, my smokable alcohol guy was out, so I had to have him get me liquid alcohol. And, like, just 32s of Old English, like, instead of smoking before school, we walked down the road and started chugging these bottles of Old English. And apparently one of the neighbors, Butthead, called the cops, and they sent, like, the ones on the golf carts at the school, and they drove up, and they didn't call them because we were, like, 14 years old drinking malt liquor before school. They called them because we put one bottle down on the sidewalk and we were littering. And I was very annoyed about that. I was like, at least call for the right reasons. And this is also, you know, where my head was at and how much attention I wanted and things like that. Like, they, you know, they took us back. You know, we didn't get expelled because we weren't on campus, but they took us downtown and, like, had to call our parents and they had to come pick us up. And, like, I still was able to make it back if I wanted to by seventh period. And I did want to, because I wanted the attention of telling my friends that I had just spent the last few periods in jail. it's just so delusional. But I got arrested a bunch more times, like six times probably before I was 18. And then, you know, I had, you know, a couple toxic relationships on the way. A lot of, you know, just being selfish myself as well. And, you know, stealing from my parents. And, you know, I got expelled my sophomore year of high school, I went to like a second chance school, and then like they told, it was like the 420 was on like a Saturday that that year, and they told us like for sure 100% of the students here are getting tested the Monday you get back. And it was like I was like a month from graduating, like, and going back to Sarasota High or whatever, and I was just like, yeah, like, I don't, you know, I'm gonna smoke anyways, because, like, I was cool, and, like, I was a real stoner, and I got, you know, finally sanctioned to, like, a weekend in juvie, and this was, like, the last straw for my parents, and I went to, they sent me to, like, this second, or this wilderness therapy program. I don't know if any of y'all have been to one, huh? It's cool. In hindsight, it was cool. Like, when I was at it, I wasn't having a good time. And I had to redo a bunch of the things that cost my parents like tens of thousands of dollars on this program, to not learn much. Like, I was like sober-ish for a little bit when I got back, but then I just started selling and, you know, my own pharmaceuticals and things like that. And I did, however, get into a phase for a little while where I was able to see, like, later in sobriety, where, like, how my isms just come out in so many different forms. Like, I firmly believe that it comes out in any way that takes me outside myself, makes me feel better about myself. Alcohol and drugs are just a symptom of a spiritual malady that the steps are meant to alleviate. And, you know, I was able to look back and see how, like, I got really obsessed with, like, working out and lifting weights and eating right and, like, the attention I was getting from girls and, you know, all these things. And, like, you know, so, like, I put the other things down because they weren't good for, you know, like, muscle reproduction and, like, you know, yeah, getting to like 6% body fat or like whatever was important to me at that time. And I don't think that's possible anymore for me. I was able to look back on that and like just see how those kind of isms came out, like, at a younger age when I put that down, even before I really thought I had a problem. And then eventually I got into some other things that were, you know, pretty bad, and I ended up getting, you know, very physically dependent on them. And I try not to spend too much time in, like, a drunkalog, but 45 minutes is a lot to fill, so I'm, like, trying to remember what my drunkalog actually is like. And, I did a lot of really shady, messed up things. Like, I got into a pretty serious relationship, like, right before I left high school, and was with this girl, like, 2.5 years, like, right, like, 6 months after we got together is when I started, like, some harder things. And then I was, like, hiding that from her for, like, another year, and stealing from my parents. And, like, my first semester in college, I would, like I mentioned, my older brother was physically disabled, and, like, just, like, I would try starting doing these things to, like, moderate myself. Like, you know, it talks about in the book, like, only beer, only wine, or only, you know, at night or after work or whatever. And so I would, like, okay, maybe a little bit in the morning, or, like, not in the morning, and, like, I'll leave everything at home and, like, just go to class, and, like, I'm not gonna leave my very important college classes for this. But then I'm, like, you know, in the middle of a trigonometry exam, going up to my professor, like, oh, my brother, he's disabled, and he pushes emergency alarm and my parents aren't home, like, all this BS to, like, get back home and, like, get a pass, and, like, I can redo this test, right? Cool. And somehow I passed that semester, but then I just didn't even bother showing up the next one, and I was just, like, too far gone. And I started mixing very dangerous things and, you know, this and that, and stealing lots of stuff and selling lots of stuff. I got picked up for 3 felonies on a warrant at my house for those kinds of activities. And, you know, I eventually went to jail and all this stuff. And I was, like, calling and, like, so my mom had bought me a car, but then she started saying, well, you have to, you know, get a job and do the payments. Like, I don't need a job, I'll do the payments. And, you know, well, where are you getting the money? I'm getting the money, don't worry. You know, pharmaceuticals. And so, like, I had, like, probably, like, and this was a massive amount of money to me at the time, like, 10 grand saved up, like, stashed. The old PS2, there was an expansion bay on the back, and you could, you know, hide money and drugs and stuff in there. It was pretty sweet. I had all this money, and for, like, a few months, I, like, paid her my car payment or whatever, and made up some way that I, you know, did some odd jobs to get this. But then it was to the point where, like, I was cutting into my profits, and I would tell her, like, oh, like, I can't afford it. You know, so she paid it for me for a few months, and then I got arrested, and my bond was, like, $2,000, you know, $20,000, but you have to pay 10% or whatever. And like, you know, she, like, I was, you know, having DTs like really bad, and like I was, you know, begging her on the phone, just get me out, I'll pay you back the money. Like, you can't even pay your $300 car payment. How are you going to pay the? Don't I have the money? Just like, and then I told her where it was, and like I was so desperate, like just like the. I just thought, it's so hard to even put myself back in the mindset of how delusional I was to think that this was going to, like, she was just going to be like, oh, great, and you can pay back all the car payments you missed. Like, I promised her that. Like, she was just going to be like, where'd this fucking 10 grand come from? Like, like, oh, this is normal for, like, a, you know, 18-year-old or whatever I was at the time. But eventually I called one of my other buddies, who also was into pharmaceuticals. He bonded me out, and then I just showed up at the house, and she was very happy about that. And, you know, convinced her to, you know, use some of the money for collateral and this and that. I was just, like, very manipulative. Like, all I cared about was getting the next one. Didn't care who I hurt. Like, I would, you know, cheat on all my girlfriends at the time. Like, I just wanted attention. Like, anything that I could do to get, you know, outside of myself or attention was what I did. That much time? Shit. I did that. I was out for like 6 months, and I was too scared at this point to continue that same business. So I just kept stealing a lot more money. So she was going through some like stuff with like credit and a divorce. So she was keeping like tens of thousands on her at a time. So I would just keep just taking money and just supporting my own habit through that. And like I felt like utter scum like the whole time. And there's like so many times throughout this next like 6 months where like mentally like every ounce of my being did not want to keep using or picking up, and I kept trying to wean off this way or that way, or like do it all on my own. And like, I mean, since I was 14 or 15 in drug counseling, like they sent me to AA meetings, I just thought it was a joke or only for old people or the guy under the bridge or like, you know, all those like typical whatever. And like no matter my best efforts, like my ideas keep me drunk. You know, I couldn't get off, you know, any substances for the life of me. On my own willpower alone, and I tried it time and time again. There was times where like I would take things to alleviate like withdrawal symptoms and like be like a few days without it, and then like again, like every fiber of my being, and I was still just like, you know, texting the people to get the stuff and do the things, like my addict like took over my body, like is the best way I can describe it. And those are some of the moments where like I was able to look back on and realize how powerless I really was. Like it was just miserable, pitiful. Anyways, eventually on those same charges my friend bonded me out on, I thought I was gonna get off scot-free because I had a paid attorney and stuff like that, but I ended up getting sentenced to 9 months in jail, which actually, you know, in hindsight is a very generous offer, considering that it's supposed to be like a 15-year minimum. So like I was like super fortunate, and I was still like pissed and this sucks and whatever. I came from such a super spoiled background, very entitled. And then 2 years of probation or whatever. And so, anyways, I went into jail, and they do have like a recovery pod where they bring in like 4 AA meetings a day. Did not go there. Had wanted nothing to do with it. I wanted to go to the work pod where your time goes quickly and whatever. But then I agreed after the fact to go to a rehab called Choices. And usually they like hold you in jail in order to like, you know, keep you from relapsing before you go to this rehab. And it's interesting how just like there's a speaker tape that I listen to on repeat a lot, where a guy says, or talks about finding the golden thread that your higher power has weaved through your life. And there's just like, there's certain things, like, and it's still hard for me to like really have dialed in like what my higher power is. Like, I don't have like an exact, like, this is it, or like it's this religion or whatever, but things like, there's certain things that have lined up for me to get sober, like at the time that I did, that are really hard to overlook, because like 95% of people like get held in jail, but like I really needed to smash still, like I still thought it was the other substances for me. I didn't think alcohol was like a problem and like all these things. And 95% of people get stuck in jail, but I got out and I got to finally smash that reservation. Like I really got, like I knew in my core, like when I told my parents, if you let me come home for these 2 weeks, for sure. No chance I'm drinking. No chance I'm doing drugs. Like, I'm going to be a good boy and do the chores and do the lawn and, you know, whatever. And literally, like, the night I got out, like, I just opened the fridge in the garage and it's like Yingling. And I'm like, that's my favorite. And then I, like, drink, like, half of it. And, like, I had been in jail for 6 months. You get, you know, time off the 9-month sentence for good time. I'm, like, halfway through it and, like, I have a buzz. And, like, my tolerance was big before. So, like, this was amazing. Like, I was so excited. Like, my tolerance is finally down. So, like, if half feels good, two is going to feel great. So I did that. But then the next night, two didn't do the same thing, so I needed three. But even before that, like, I woke up the next morning before I had to do this yard work that I promised I would do. And I just remember explicitly thinking in my own head, like, wow, like, I just don't like being sober. Like I remember it, like, clear as day. And then I proceeded to take the Captain Morgan's and pour, like, you know, big mixer with orange juice and whatever, and yeah, just chugged a few of those before going out into the baking hot sun and doing yard work, and, you know, it makes sense. And so, you know, I did, you know, things the next few nights, and then there's another thing that I did while I was out before I went to rehab. I'll go through this last one before I get sober. That really, like, was just like, wow, I'm a scumbag. Like, so while I was in jail and whatnot, my brother's physical disability had gotten, like, way worse. Like, he was, like, degenerating a lot faster than we thought. He had, like, nurses coming in every day, like a hospital bed at the house, and all this stuff. And he had, you know, before I even went in, was starting to get, like, oxycodone and things like that prescribed to him. And my mom, like, because I was stealing all these medications, she had his stuff in, like, a lockbox, like a portable lockbox that she could come bring and medicate him and whatever. And like, one night, also, you know, another golden thread thing, like, if I wasn't up drinking and using at, like, 3 or 4 a.m., he probably would have died this night. But, like, I heard him, like, he was throwing up, he couldn't move over, he was choking on his own vomit. So, like, I got him up, rolled him over, called my mom downstairs, she brought the medicine and all that stuff. But as soon as she was distracted and the box was unlocked, I was gonna get my shit, all right? And just, like, again, like, this is after, like, only, like, a week back using, after, like, I thought the only issue for me was the physical separation. Like, I was sure of it. I knew I didn't have an actual problem. It was just the physical component. I couldn't quite get over that. Now that I had the 6 months in jail, I'm good, because I can do it on my own, because I'm fucking smart. Part of my language. I hate when people curse. But anyway, so, you know, like, that's pretty scummy. Like, you know, like, my, like, he literally almost just died. Like, you know, like, and all I can think about is getting some medication, like, some extra oomph out of this box. And yeah, I stole a handful and then used them up until I went in. And, like, I was also very lucky that when they tried drug tested me before the rehab, as the Department of Corrections run rehab, that they didn't, you know, send me up the road for 15 years. Instead, they gave me a waiver, let me go on the program and see how I do. And I couldn't be more grateful for that. You know, I still wasn't, like, sold on, like, the I'm going to stay sober forever. Like, the, you know, the first person who shared, you know, mentioned, like, you know, focusing on one day at a time, like, that was a hard concept for me to learn. And, like, when I originally was, like, projecting, like, so long out, like, oh, I'm not going to drink at my wedding and this, you know, blah, 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 I haven't had to run into that issue yet 10 years later. Like, there's not been a wedding. you know, like, projecting so far out, things that I have no idea what's going to happen, you know, how it's going to play out and, like, whatever. And, like, just learning to be, like, right in today. And, like, nor was I still yet, like, truly convinced that I needed this. These are, a lot of these are, like, things I looked back on. You know, I started listening and people started bringing in, like, the same story, like, all these people who tried, like, just, you know, getting sober for, like, a year or two and then, like, not doing meetings anymore, or, like, you know, marijuana maintenance, or, like, all these different things that, like, all these people before me had tried. And, like, I'm just, like, you know, I was so sick of disappointing my family. I was so sick of, like, being that scumbag. And one person who brought a meeting in that I'm still good friends with to this day, he said, like, it's a really like basic quote, but like it just like it was like the right time, right moment, and it just hit me when he said, "A smart person learns from their own mistakes, but a wise person learns from the mistakes of others." And so I started listening to those people who like stopped. You know, I was like thinking, like, okay, so I'm not going to stop going to meetings and think I got it. I'm not going to try marijuana maintenance. I'm not going to try all these things. I'm going to, you know, do what's suggested, do the steps, whatever the things that the people that are staying sober are doing. It's like such a simple concept, but we're so like rebellious and want to do things our own way that it's like it just takes so long to snap it into our stubborn freaking minds. And so I started doing those things, kind of, like not perfectly. Like I have not stayed sober this long doing this program perfectly. That's for damn sure. I've messed up a lot. I've done a lot, like, you know, early on I did a lot of dishonest things. You know, I still had some like stealing issues and this and that. But the things that I did perfectly was I didn't pick up no matter what. You know, as much as I hate that saying, but like I was always willing to be open and honest with my sponsor or share it at a meeting or like tell on myself. And then when I was suggested on what work to do to fix those things, like either make an amends or like, you know, if I stole from a store, like go buy that thing again and put it back on the shelf, like whatever you have to do, like, you know, stop doing a certain behavior and like do a living amends on it because, you know, apologizing for it would be causing more damage. Like whatever the case may be, like I was willing to start doing those things. I consistently started meeting with my sponsor. I got super involved in Ficky Paw. A great young lady named Jamie brought the bid to Sarasota area, and we started putting on events and like going out to different cities. And you know, I started just like being like a decent human being, like learning how to like not be a spoiled rotten brat, like, you know, pay my own bills, like, you know, do all these things and like actually be there for my family. It's just really cool, like the way that my life's developed. I got to go back to school and like get like, you know, degrees and things that were cool, and then like I used them for a little bit, and then Rona happened, then I switched careers, and recently I'm in a very different career than what I went to school for, but it, you know, it's going really well. It is taking up a lot of my time, and like I am trying to like, you know, I switched sponsors and I'm being really current with her, and just like super spiritual. Like I really enjoy like the way that she approaches things, and I guess I did run out of too much time to explicitly explain that one, but and I've jumped around with a few different sponsors, and like I said, I did not do this thing like super perfect. Like I got in a relationship like a month before I left rehab. I don't think I actually touched on right before, like also a month or so before I left rehab, my brother, who was, you know, degenerating really quickly, he passed away from his disease, which was not alcoholism. You know, I was able to stay sober through that by, like, you know, talking to guys in the program, like, taking the suggestions that people spoke about, and, like, you know, and also stay sober through, like, my guilt of, like, at the time not being able to feel as guilty, like, because, like, I was just so, like, still, like, getting feelings back and, like, learning how to, like, even, you know, deal with it. I cried a lot more drunk than I have sober. It's very weird. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of different things that I've learned to deal with as, like, a sober individual than I could have really hoped for, like, being an example to, like, my little brother. He, like, actually looks up to me now instead of, like, one time he caught me, like, in the corner, like, having a bad trip on mushrooms, like, when he was, like, 8, like, just freaking out, like, and it was just, like, so embarrassing, like, to, like, when I... Anyway, it's just like to be in a place now where, like, you know, like he looks up to me and like asks me for advice and like things like that. It's really cool. And like my amends I got to make to him, me and him went on a trip to like London, and he wanted to go to like a, you know, London pub, and like it was on like the wharf. And there's like a little dock in the back of the pub looking out on the water, and like I got to like, you know, make my amends to him there, and like just like some really cool like amends experiences. And there's some that I recently have been bringing up with my sponsor, some financial things that like I never quite decided on or like, you know, like got to take care of, am now like willing to put in the effort to make those work. So it's always an ongoing process. You know, one thing that I've certainly learned is that like just being willing and putting forth the effort, like I don't have to do it perfectly. I just have to be willing to put forth the effort and do it to the best of my ability at that time. And if I need to correct anything, you know, there's always time to do that. I just need to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And like getting involved in service and giving back to the newcomer, I can definitely say it's like super cool to have like been around a few years and like watch people who've come in like There's this guy in Sarasota who, like, he got out of prison and he had, like, the grill and, like, the baggy pants and, like, talked really hood and, like, whatever. And now he's got, like, the button-up shirt and the glasses and he's, like, a nerd. And it's just so cool to see, like, how drastically people can change and, like, you know, like, for the better and put themselves together. Like, he's a programmer. Like, it's crazy. Like, how lives have been, like, lives I've been able to see unfold and change and, like, the power of this program and how... And the power of, like, seeing and reminding myself how many people I've seen that I really respect who do relapse and, like, you know, like, think, like, oh, like, you know, this program's not for me, or, you know, this is, you know, the wrong way or whatever, who think they can do it on their own, who are dead or are, like, in a psychosis from, like, the amount of things that they're doing drug-wise. And it's, like, I don't like seeing those things. It's, like, really terrible and sad. And it's, like, I also have to realize I'm not their higher power. And, I, you know, all I can do is stay and be an example. But, like, I can definitely not do that. And that's why I keep coming back. And even when I feel disconnected or, like, you know, I don't always feel like I have necessarily, like, the best sobriety or the best message or, like, whatever, I continuously, you know, I'm willing to show up when I'm asked, when I'm available. And I will continue to do so. But thanks for listening to that spiel. And, yeah, that's it.